Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light 3-0 and she's gone.
Hello and welcome to the 3-0 show. It is Thursday, September 7th. Rick Giroli here with Eno Saris. We are totally out of our league. DVR is not here. He is finishing up the second half of his much-earned paternity leave, so it is going to be Eno and I, two-man show, two-woman show. I don't know. How would you even say that? Two-woman?
Also, way earlier than usual.
Exactly. So, logistically, maybe a little tough, but we are here. The content is still here, and we'll be with you for the next couple of weeks talking about a really unusually busy time. You know, this is usually a little bit of a lull, I feel like, right after the trade deadline, but there has just been news after news after news, it seems, on the baseball front. Some good, some bad, some just really off the reservation in terms of things that nobody wants to think about, talk about, some unfortunate things happening there as well. But we'll get into all of that. We're going to get into playoff teams that we feel like have a chance to win the World Series. We're going to get to teams that we feel like are fringy right now but could be dangerous if they get in. I think we probably are going to call time of death on the Padres, right? I think we're probably done on them and on their season. But first, you know, you wrote and you've been writing kind of a update on where things stand playoff-wise. The season ended today. And what has, in your mind, when you look at this kind of stuff, what has stood out to you about, you know, where we would be at and what team do you feel like is still maybe missing from that playoff picture?
I think what's kind of interesting is, I don't know if it's recency bias, but in the last month, the Astros have scored more runs than anybody in baseball, and they just ran all through the Rangers. I mean, that was pretty intense. Like, yeah. That was a beatdown, as they call it. And they kind of start to look all of a sudden like World Series contenders again. It's not what I thought most of the year. You know, most of the year I thought these guys are going to come in on a wild card. And I don't know if they have the pitching. And I still don't know if they have the pitching, but adding Verlander was a big deal. And, you know, that gives you a number one. They've always had a sort of collection of guys behind a number one like Verlander. So I think they look like legitimate title contenders, and this comes at a time when I think the guys who I thought were the most legitimate title contenders that weren't named the Braves, the Dodgers are reeling. I mean, Clayton Kershaw's throwing 88. He does not look healthy. He does not look like he's fully healthy. I don't know. I think he'll be one of the most anticipated radar gun readings when he steps on the mound again next time. Because 88.2 that he registered in his last start was the lowest velo of his career. So, so like that's a problem. And then the Julio Urias stuff is just, just really unfortunate and just terrible. I particularly hate that the first time he got caught, basically he said, well, there's no history of this. And so now you're kind of like, well, there is a history. And I think looking at precedent, we're looking at 100 game suspension or more because it's a second time offender. So that's tough for them, man. They could possibly not have their first, number one or number two starters in it for what they would have figured out as a playoff situation. So the Dodgers look vulnerable. The Astros are surging, and the Braves are just intensely good. And just, you know, almost the question is who could beat the Braves, I guess, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we don't talk about them enough because they're just always good and it's kind of boring, right? It's like, the Braves are doing Brave things. But I want to dig into the Dodgers a little bit because you had a great point about the AOS. It's an absolutely fascinating race, by the way. I think people were worried about Texas's pitching in April and May, and they're still worried about Texas's pitching, right? And how that's going to kind of shake out. And certainly Seattle has the ability here to really kind of be a thorn in everyone's side. So that's going to be the division race to watch, I think, certainly down the stretch these last couple weeks. But the Dodgers had a spectacular August, like an out-of-your-mind kind of August. And now here we sit September 7th, and all of a sudden they are vulnerable. We are worried about them because – for those who don't know, Julio Urías placed on administrative leave formally yesterday until further notice. Now, how this usually works is MLB is investigating. He's still being paid. He's getting service time. It's not an admission of guilt. MLB is investigating this. Now, he also has a court date at the end of September. He has yet to be charged, but he is going to probably be charged before that court date, right? It's a formality. So MLB usually can't get most of their stuff done, like talking to Urías, for example, until after the court system is done. So now we are looking at sometime in October at the earliest. MLB doesn't like any kind of news during the postseason to break out. They don't like teams to say, we've hired this guy to be our bench coach. You think they want to announce Julio Urías' suspension or punishment if they find something? So I think the Dodgers, whether Urías is guilty or not, and he's going to go through this thorough process, is not going to be with the Dodgers this season. And he's going to be a free agent. So it's almost like he doesn't exist anymore. You mentioned the issues with Clayton Kershaw. Now, all of a sudden, there's a lot of problems here on this team. They got absolutely trounced 11-4 by the Red Hot Marlins, who we're going to get into a little bit later in this show. But, you know, a few weeks ago, this would have seemed laughable because we were even talking about, I think, last week, oh, the Dodgers are doing Dodger things again. But suddenly they look very beatable, especially in a short series, don't they?
I mean, the rotation that I kind of think that Clinton is going to go back on the IL. Like, that's where I see that going. Lance Lynn they have not fixed his home run problem. So, you know, if I was building the rotation for a short series, I think I might go Bobby Miller number one, Walker Buehler number two. I mean, who hasn't yet even started in the big leagues coming off of TJ, and it's a second TJ. So I would want to have maybe Ryan Yarbrough close after Walker Buehler because I don't know how many innings he's going to give me. And then I don't even know who I'm starting my third one. Maybe Ryan Pepio, who, you know, is an exciting young arm.
Yeah.
But he has real command issues, and I don't know that he's necessarily, you know, people talk about like he's fixed them. I don't know that you fix command issues like that really quickly. So it's almost like a scramble just to find starters, whereas before you were kind of like, we'll have this, and then we'll have this, and we'll have this.
Doesn't look
as good anymore.
No, so it just really makes them very vulnerable at like the worst time of the season, because we often talk about, listen, The best team doesn't always win the World Series, right? It's the hottest team. It's the team who's on a run. And yeah, the Dodgers may have won August, but as we sit here right now, it's not like they've got two or three guys waiting in the wings to take over. This is not a good situation. They need to figure out what's going on with Kershaw. As we said, Urías is not going to be a factor at all. So all of a sudden, you're like, they could be a first round exit, which, you know, I think a lot of people, if we had said that a couple months ago, people would have been like, okay. But they seem to obviously have righted things and went on this run and started to look like the Dodgers again. But as we know, in October, it all comes down to the pitching. Offenses kind of go in and out.
Yeah. No, I don't know. You don't agree? I've done the correlations. I've run the numbers. Here comes the nerd. But I mean, it's just hitting is well correlated to success in the playoffs. But I just think that, like, when you're going up against the very best, like if you're going up against the Braves or something, it's going to be hard for them to outslug the Braves. They even just had a series with them, you know, and couldn't outslug the Braves. So, you know, I think they might win a series just on their bats. They score a lot of runs. But I think in terms of like winning the World Series, I have a hard time seeing it with this collection of arms. So, you know, the Braves do deserve a little bit more than a passing flyby mention. One thing that was interesting, they came to town and I got to talk to a few of them. You know, they're going to break some records for home runs, at least the Braves record. They're still within sights of the overall record for team home runs. And I asked Matt Olson, you know, why or how they're doing that. And one thing that he answered that was pretty interesting to me was we're all like different. You know, when you face the Braves lineup, it's not like we're all the same disciplined, you know, take a pitch, walk. It's not like nine Max Muncies, you know. We've got our more sort of disciplined guys. Like he was like, you know, I'm a little bit more of the like sort of disciplined guys, but then you also have like Acuña and Albies, you know, who are more free swingers, but who can make contact on pitches that you didn't expect. And I think this is kind of important, especially when you go up against, you know, somebody, a wild guy with great stuff. You know, a disciplined guy might actually mess up there a little bit because he might take some pitches that he didn't think were strikes and or miss on some pitches in the zone because the guy has great stuff. But somebody like an Acuña might take a pitch that's 5 inches outside of the zone. But take it, but not a great pitch and take it for a homer, you know, because he's free swinging. So just the different ways that they line up and, you know, righty, lefty, they have the kind of thing where like they have so many guys that are going to hit 20 homers. It's just every spot in the lineup has power and comes at you from a different, you know, high ball hitters, low ball hitters. So that's something that I think deserves mention. One thing that is super sad around the Braves that makes me sad is that Mike Soroka went down with injury again. The early prognosis was really terrible. They were talking about numbness in the fingers, and that's kind of you know, something that you usually associate with thoracic outlet, which can be a career ender. The good news, I guess, is that it's a forearm strain, but this just tacks on to what has been, you know, just a really tough career so far for Soroka. I feel so badly for him. I had a pitcher text me from camp when he saw him the first time and said, "This guy's legit. He's an athlete. He can place it. He has really good stuff." You know, just the body has kind of failed him. And I think that's a little bit of part of when you're talking about, you know, teams getting hot in the playoffs at the right time. I think injury is the biggest part of it. You know, if Soroka could have put together, you know, three healthy months this year, but they had happened to be September and October or two of them, that would have helped the Braves. So, you know, that's the Braves story is not one about injury, but that is something that can happen in October and November.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You know who else is on pace for their team record in home runs that you wouldn't expect? The Tampa Bay Rays. Are like without Wander Franco, and you know, you'd be proud of me. I spent a lot of time today on Fangraphs looking at WRC Plus of the Rays, and they actually, without Wander, they have 5 guys that are over 125. So at least 25% better than league average, which is really impressive. I mean, they have 14 wins in the 21 games he's been gone. They just took 2 out of 3 against Boston. You know, you look at them, and they actually only trail Atlanta as far as the season WRC Plus. So that obviously includes Wander Franco. But I mean, if you look at this, Yandy Diaz, 154, Isak Paredes, 138, Luke Raley, 128, Randy Arozarena, 126, Josh Lowe, 125. Then they have 3 other players that are over 100 that are better than league average. So we are now talking about just a really deep team. And how many teams, you know, could lose their best hitter? He's still their best guy in
war. And their best man.
And their best arm is Shane McClanahan. They lost 3/5 of their rotation, really.
Yeah.
Rasmussen, right? And then they also lost Jeffrey Springs.
Yeah.
So in addition to, you know, the relievers and the other injuries that happened to teams, but you look at the Rays and you look at the job that they've did, and it just feels like to me like it's underappreciated. Kevin Cash probably should win manager of the year, even though the Orioles are doing crazy things, right? How do you measure that? I mean, you had this discussion because it took me way longer than I thought it would to write about the Rays, but in terms, they're not up there in terms of IL stints, right? But when you look at like WAR as it correlates to guys on the injured list, and then they are certainly one of the teams that has had to kind of absorb a lot of meaningful losses. Whereas I can't think with the Orioles of any meaningful losses. John Means is going to come back. He threw his last rehab start for AAA Norfolk.
Felix Bautista is the only one that really
Bautista would be the one. Because Means they knew was gone because he had Tommy John surgery. So this wasn't an unexpected thing at all. Bautista would be the one. But other than that, they've been a very healthy team. They're a very young team. But Tampa, you look at what they've done, 99.9% chance to make the postseason as we record this on Thursday. 3.5 games back of the Orioles. And they are missing so many guys, and so many good guys that are part of their core. It's really incredible.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yeah, and you know what's amazing about the Rays is I think just a real hand in glove tightness between the player development side and their coaching side and their player acquisition side, because they always have a plan for somebody. You know, when they acquire Aaron Civale, they say, we like what you've been doing, but let's throw the slider more than you have been. And his strikeout rate goes from 19% to 28%. And when they sign Zach Eflin to, the biggest deal in franchise history, which, 3-40 is the biggest deal in Rays franchise history, they say, we're going to emphasize the curveball more. And they have him throwing it harder than he used to, throwing the slider less and throwing the cutter more. So, they have a plan for everybody that they bring in. And if you look across their team depth chart, really the only homegrown player that is a huge part of what they're doing right now, I guess it's the two of them, is Josh Lau and it's Josh Lowe and Brandon Lau. The Lowe and Lau brothers are the pretty much the only homegrown guys. If you look at their entire relief staff, Pete Fairbanks acquired from the Rangers. Stevenson, Diekman was a waiver claim. I think Armstrong was a waiver claim. Diaz trade with the Guardians. Paredes trade with the Tigers. Rosarena trade with the Cardinals. Siri trade with the Astros. Rayleigh was a waiver claim, I think. This is a team that's built on acquiring players from other teams and making them better. And it's pretty amazing.
It is. And, I was talking to Diekman, and he said that the Rays have like an aura about them. And I was trying to think, how many other teams have that same aura where if you're a pitcher, you know you're going to get better going there? He said Kyle Snyder, their pitching coach, was like, man, just give me a month and buy in. He's like, I don't need to be convinced. Like, do the Tampa Bay Rays. I'll do whatever you want, And they told him start going to change up more. And when you look at the success he's had versus Chicago, which, we've talked about, it is a mess. The White Sox are a mess. We've talked about that ad nauseum on this show. But I don't know. The Dodgers maybe would fall into that category. Would Cleveland for you? If you're a pitcher and you get claimed somewhere, how many organizations would you just blind faith say, yeah, whatever you guys want?
I think Cleveland would count, but they don't have a long history of doing that with veterans, because they don't sign free agents that much.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, if that really counts. Dodgers, I think, definitely are on that list. I think Giants, to some extent, they've had some good history with Carlos Rodon and Alex Cobb. And, you know, I think that the Giants are on that list. You know, a sneaky team that I think has done well, you know, with veterans. Actually, the Rangers have done pretty well picking up veteran starting pitchers and having good seasons there. I wonder, you know, if the Mariners are going to join that group just because they've developed such a great in-house staff that's all sort of internal development. But, you know, maybe they'll convince people. But that buy-in is super important because one half of the calculus when you're trying to do player development is the player side. You know, are they going to do what you ask them to do? Are they going to believe in it? Or are they going to just listen to their private coaches and ignore your coaches?
Because there's
more and more private coaches out there that are telling you, no, don't do that.
Yes. Like if you go to the Chicago White Sox, are you going to be like, yeah, do whatever you guys say?
You know, no. I've even heard of players that were on teams that have a poor reputation, that where the team told them to stop throwing a pitch, and they didn't stop throwing the pitch. They just called it something else.
Amazing. I mean, somebody was like,
I thought we told you to stop throwing the cutter. He's like, I'm not throwing a cutter, throw a slider.
incredible. But there is that pull, I think, especially, and it's getting worse and worse between, you know, the private coaches and certainly on the hitting side too, not just the pitching side, and organizations, right? And you kind of have to balance that. And I think some organizations have earned the benefit of, yeah, you know what, I'm going to listen to you because everyone here seems to get better, versus, you know, organizations where it's like, what have you actually done? And I think we can put the White Sox safely in that bucket.
I feel really badly for like national, like team.
National.
Like, pro, well, no, I do. But the
we'll
pro,
get into
pro
them
team,
later.
Pro team level, like hitting coaches, you know, because you get fired, first of all. Like your average tenure is like a year and a half, 2 years. So you're the first on the chopping block. But imagine you're tasked with like you take over a team and you're like the Mets or something. It's just an example, right? And you're like, oh, I'm the new hitting coach of the Mets. Awesome. You get to the team and you're like, well, Lindor has a private coach that he flies in every other day, you know? So don't talk to Lindor. I'm not saying that's how it is. I'm just saying
Alonso.
You know, don't touch Alonso. He's fine. You know? So like, you're like, what can I do then? And the kids are like, I don't know who you are. I've never heard of you.
They're like, none of the veterans listen to you. And then the Mets do poorly and you get fired.
It's not an example specifically about the Mets. It's just sort of like, what if you did land in that situation? You know, I'm not saying these things are true of Lindor and Alonso. It's just, that's how it works as a hitting coach now is, you know, you have your guys you can talk to. And then one of the things I think the Giants have done that's really interesting is they have 15 coaches. So it's like, you know, they're just throwing numbers at it almost. They're like, you know, we think you'll like one of these guys.
What is that? Too many cooks in the kitchen. I don't know. I want your opinion on this, you know, because this was a topic the other night when I was on this. And why? Because the baby Nets have done so well. Some of them in a short sample size, right? You're seeing Ronnie Mauricio come up. You know, Vientos, Beatty, Alvarez, you know, have been up in various capacities. Now you got DJ Stewart, who may or may not be a flash in the pan. But people are like, well, what about the Yankees? Because they've got Volpe and, you know, some other younger, Jason Dominguez. People are salivating over Alessio has power. Who do you feel better about, the baby Yankees or the baby Mets right now?
Yeah, that is fascinating.
Did I put you on the spot? Yeah.
No, it's great. I like out of all the players, I think Jason Dominguez is maybe the best. I don't know if this is a recency thing, but I also, you know, I've been sort of watching his career and I think he's been underrated in the minors. One of the few things that you could say about him is he misses the ball a little bit too much, but that has been something he's been improving greatly this season. So I think I take Jason Dominguez number one. Number two could be a tie between Anthony Volpe and Francisco Alvarez. They are somewhat similar offensively, you know, like kind of like hit homers, and take walks, maybe not a great batting average in the long run, and a premium position. So you one has a catcher, one has a shortstop. So you know it might be the lower half that determines it. But if you give me Jason Dominguez, I think I'll take the Yankees, baby bombers. I mean, there's still a chance that Beatty or Mauricio, become the best player out of all of them. But for right now, the Yankees have the number one guy and the guy tied for number two. So that
you know what,
I have the edge to the Yankees.
Interesting. So Alvarez, I love Alvarez,
like,
and also
and how different is this from like a week ago? Would I've given you the same answer a week ago? You know, recency bias is one of the hardest things to think about. It's just like whatever's happening now is freshest in your brain, and you sort of forget what happened like a week ago. You're like a week ago, I might have been like, "Man, the Yankees are screwed," you know. But now with Dominguez, I'm like, "Man, this could be a good. This could be the guy." You see him next to Judge, and you're just like, "Oh yeah, like the young star with the old star." Volpe has quietly put together a really like solid season. This is
he has in the big leagues,
and he's been really good defensively and offensively. He's finding his footing. So all of a sudden you're like, oh, we have a shortstop, we have a young shortstop, we have a young center fielder, and we have Aaron Judge. Maybe things aren't so bad in the Bronx, you know?
Yeah, it's funny because I think if the Yankees weren't having such a down season, people like if they were having a good year and Volpe was hitting ninth and like people would be like, wow, this guy's doing great. But because they've had a bad year, people like expected him to be Aaron Judge now almost. Right. But if you look at the numbers, it is very encouraging what he's been able to do in his first year. You know, what's crazy though about Vientos is he hit a ball harder than any other Met this season already.
That's true. He has serious contact issues though.
Yeah, he does. So it's going to like, who's going
and
to develop
defensive ones? Right? Like, where do you think he plays?
Where's he going to play? He's been at second a little bit. I know Buck has wanted him at third. He's kind of lost that battle. That's obviously a team going through a lot of transitions. Seems like David Stern is coming with more of a win than if, right? It would be a huge disappointment after all of this David Stern stuff. David Stern goes to Houston.
I think this is, that would be. Because I think he's like it's bordering on tampering. I mean, the stuff that Steve Cohen has said, like, I think he literally was quoted as saying, "I'm waiting."
Pretty much. Like, I mean,
that guy's under contract.
Now he's allowed to talk to teams. As the Athletic, Will Salmon and Ken Rosenbaum reported the other day, once August ended, there's that little clause in his contract now where he's like an advisor to the Brewers, where he's now allowed to talk to other teams. So it is not tampering any longer, but yeah, it was definitely borderline illegal for quite some time. Borderline gray area, which is where most of this sport lives, in the gray area, I feel like.
It's true, but I have a great amount of respect for Stearns, and the reason that I do is that he was, out of the Lunau tree, sort of like he's related to that Astros, championship. He helped build some of that. But I don't get the same cutthroat consultant vibe that I do from Lunau. You know, like he's not.
Yeah.
He's a little bit more like, for example, I was talking to Stephen Vogt, a good friend of mine in the game. And he mentioned that when he got to Milwaukee, David Stearns was there. And you have to think, this is. Stephen Vogt is not like a huge acquisition. I hope he doesn't listen to me. Hey, man. But like, you know, this means that like when they picked up a possible backup, catcher, David Stearns went down to the clubhouse. This is something that I noticed, at least that, general managers don't do this during media availability. But like, how often do you see a general manager in the clubhouse? Like very
depends on the GM. It used to be a real regular thing, but in this day and age, yeah.
Dick Williams, I used to see in the clubhouse some. Billy Bean, I've been there for forever, and I've seen him once in the clubhouse, and he was looking for a towel.
lots of GMs don't like to be down there because, they have to make the tough decisions. They don't want to get too close to the players.
I saw Farhan come down and give Alex Cobb a hug for his near no-hitter. I can kind of sort of rattle off the times I've seen it. So I think that Stearns and for I talked to other players too that said that the Brewers have a real, over the last few years, the Brewers have had a real concern for the lives of their players outside of baseball, and have been really think of them as human beings as well as players. And so that gives me hope that David Stearns is the rare kind of executive that can think about things in terms of efficiency, because on some level you do want to spend your money right. But he also knows about building player development and building from the ground up. He also has an eye for, people as human beings. So I have a hope for him to be the guy that can turn this around for New York. They need somebody who has built before, and he has built before.
Yeah. It's just so interesting. I feel like with this wave of GMs was all predicated on the success of Theo Epstein, right? Of the young.
Yeah, there are trees,
analytic
right?
Guy. Yeah, the young analytic guy who also happened to be, Theo is an excellent public speaker, right? He's great with the media. He's very politician-esque. He presents himself well. He's very smart. He's very gregarious. And I think ever since then, front offices have wanted basically to clone him. And sometimes that's worked out. And lots of times, though, you've just gotten the GM who is, as you said, like just analytical, just robotic, not able to do the other part of the job, which is also important, right? So, if Stearns is that blend, that wouldn't surprise me, because he's so respected in the game. He's well thought of. And he did a great job with a very small market budget conscious team. What would he do with the Mets, right? You kind of are like, whoa, God, what would he do with a lot of money, right?
I think you're totally right. And I think if you look at it, there are like certain just like trees of success. Once an organization has success, all the people around that person that was in charge get jobs. And so you have the Theo Epstein tree of success. And I think that does that include Ben Charrington? Through Boston?
Yeah.
I think so. And it includes Jed
the
Hoyer,
Cubs guy.
Who's now on the Cubs.
Yep.
It includes there's got to be some names I'm not thinking of. There's some names that are not in baseball right now that it includes. But then there's also the Astros tree of success that includes Mike Elias and Sid Majdahl coming from the Astros to the Orioles. There's
Cleveland
Mike
is
Fast.
Another tree.
Mike Fast is over in Atlanta. He came from the Astros. And then there's the Andrew Friedman Rays tree of success. So you have the Friedman at the Dodgers and Chaim Bloom in Boston. So
James Click, these, like, Eric Neander. Yeah.
You have these certain like trees of success, which like once you've had some success, like you start getting poached, and those guys, those people have teams. It's not a guaranteed thing, but I think Stearns has done enough in his own right, really. It's not necessarily just the Astros aura. I think what he did in Milwaukee is his own thing,
Yeah, no, I agree. It's so interesting, though, because if you think about it, we were talking about this the other day. With someone in the game. Like, you look at the GM job openings, and there shouldn't be that many, right? There could be a lot of managerial openings, though. If you think about it, both New York teams could be open. Francona has made it pretty clear that he's retiring. So now there's another opening. And then you look at could people be fired? What about the Angels? Is Phil Nevin last? Is Perry Mathiasen last? His contract is up. That could be another free agency opening, right? What's happening in San Diego? Do both Bob Melvin and AJ Preller make it through this? I could see it.
I kind of think so. I think maybe like one last hurrah because of the way the team is built. They got Soto one more year. I mean, how many managers can AJ Preller fire? And I don't think you can necessarily blame their record on one run losses on Bob Melvin, who had a stellar record in one run games before this. So, that one's really interesting to me. But of all those jobs you mentioned, sort of managerially, I kind of like the Guardians one the best, because if I'm a person that wants to be a long-term manager, I want to link up with like a sort of player development factory. I want to link up with someone that has a young team I want to be like the Kevin Cash of a new team, you know, where I come in and I say, I'm in lockstep with the front office. We talk to each other. They take my input. I've got a young team that's going to be getting better. And I'm going to stick here for a while. And they're going to give me 5 years as opposed to, you know, taking a job in New York or something. You kind of feel like you got 6 months.
Yeah. You just want to be in the central, you know. Yeah. You just want to make
We're not allowed to say anything bad about the Central.
Why?
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big juicy investment. That's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Speaking of openings, the White Sox, Pedro Grifol, does he stay, right? That's another interesting one.
Really public missteps that I just, you know, he's like, he publicly says, oh, Michael Kopech is a starter. There's no way that we're trying him in the bullpen. And then like 4 days later, he's like, we're trying Michael Kopech in the bullpen. You're like, are you not talking to somebody? Is somebody not talking to you? Like, what's happening here?
I mean, the reports that guys are missing meetings. I mean, that's all a clubhouse manager.
And Milton comes and says, your closer's asleep in the bullpen. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't look good for him. Plus, you may want, like, Chris Getz may want to, you know, have, you know, his people in the places that he wants them.
Yeah, he may. So I don't know. It's interesting. I was thinking about it though. There should be some, at least a handful, right, of managerial openings. There's going to be some movement. When you think about this,
I wouldn't be surprised actually if the Yankees job goes up. I don't know. There's, you know, I think Aaron Boone's done a fine job, but if you are transitioning to younger players and, you know, you feel like there's been something missing there managerially, I know for sure that like some listeners here are like, yes, like he needs to go. Yeah. Like there is definitely a contingent of Yankees Twitter that has been calling for his firing for a long time. I don't necessarily think that managers have that much of an impact on the team. I think it's mostly about, like, honestly, it's the hardest part for me to analyze. I think it's mostly about vibes. I think managers are like vibe managers, you know, they're like, they talk to the media, they manage the vibe there. They manage the vibe in the clubhouse. They have to be very specific and careful about their criticism. You know, how they put any criticism out there, or if they defend their players all the time. And then they have to be careful about their vibes with the umpires. Cause I think for sure there are, like maybe Aaron Boone might be disliked by umpires. Like there is a vibe management there between the umpire and the manager. Right.
Yeah.
And there've got to be ones where it's like, oh, this guy's always blowing up on me. I don't like him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's so interesting. All it depends on, though, it's like what me and you think don't matter. It's all about ownership and that level, right? And it's so interesting.
That's another vibe you got to manage.
Yeah, it's so interesting how these vibes change, because I think going into the season, you know, I read people saying like, well, Davey Martinez on the hot seat, probably going to get fired. You know, they're going to try to sell the team. And Davey signs a 3-year extension. It's 2 years plus an option. But there is a lot of drama going on in the Capitol. You know, as I reported yesterday, it was six scouts. It's actually more than a dozen people that have been fired or been told that, hey, you're not coming back next year, however way you want to package that news. In the National
Sports
Organization.
What are the roles?
It's all scouting, special assistants, a lot of special assistants to Mike Rizzo, scouting, cross-checkers.
That's so weird, dude.
Four people in the international department. Johnny DePuglia, their VP of international scouting over the weekend, was told, like, hey, he ain't coming back. So he up and quit, resigned before this all went down. Then yesterday, the rest of the other shoe drops, all this else goes. Now, what's crazier, you know, is that Mike Rizzo still hasn't signed a contract extension. So,
yeah. Also, what's crazy to me is they're firing their scouts. And I was just about to say today, when I was thinking about what we were talking about on the show, that the rude thing I was thinking about saying, and I'll just say it, is this a replacement level rebuild? What I'm suggesting is that, like, there's not a lot of art to this rebuild. It's just trade your best players for prospects and just wait to see who works out. But I will say the one thing that they've done well is get good players in those trades. Like, I didn't think CJ Abrams could hit for power. You know, and I don't think there was really an analytic that said this guy's going to hit for power. Like, there was not really anything. He hit the ball super softly, but he's filled out a little bit. He's taking bigger swings and he's hit for more power this year than I thought he could do. You talk about James Woods. I thought this guy's not going to make any contact. He's like 6'8" and, like, you know, he's already missing the ball and he doesn't make a ton of contact, but he's still stealing bases, looks like really athletic and looks like a real player, you know. Mackenzie Gore, I wasn't sure about. He looks like a legit major league pitcher, at least. Caber Ruiz, the first half of this year looked like, oh, what have we done? Like, this guy can't hit the ball hard at all. He's just started pulling fly balls, and now he has 16 homers. That's like, you know, 8 more than I thought he might put up for the year, you know. So,
yeah,
you know, I would say that I still don't love their player development process, but, you know, their rebuild has found them. Lane Thomas is the found guy that you find off waiver wires. They also picked up Jared Young on waiver wires. So they've been working the waiver wires. Their trades have given them CJ Abrams, an up the middle guy, and Caber Ruiz, two up the middle guys, and a pitcher. So, you know, they haven't been doing anything that many things wrong. And I would actually say the scouts probably helped them.
Didn't yes, the scouts are get how Abrams? They made those trades. Exactly. Yes. And what's crazy is 2 years ago, you know, a lot of teams pared down COVID. 2 years ago, they said, we're going to make a big push for scouting and development for this rebuild. And they hired most of the guys who were let go yesterday were guys that had been hired 2 years ago to beef up this department. So
maybe it is about player development somehow, but you're still saying that there's mostly scouts that was fired. That doesn't make sense. I would be looking at player development.
Yes, no changes on the player, like in that avenue, which I agree with you, is antiquated. And what Mike Rizzo has done and should be commended for is he's made difficult trades, and he has made what looks like right now shrewd trades. How many people said, hey, you can't trade Juan Soto, you're going to get fleeced no matter what? And he got crushed early on for getting fleeced, but it looks more and more like they got some really good players out of that deal. You mentioned James Woods. Apparently, that was like the one guy that the scouts in the Padres system said to Preller, do not trade this guy. Like, people really liked him. They thought well of him. They think he's going to be a star. And you're right. Their rebuild has gone quick. And I think people and fans in particular have been very happy about that. Like, they are over 500 in the second half. They could be a team that is competitive, maybe even as early as next year. But under the hood, like you said, it was not because their player development got better. It was because they made shrewd trades to jumpstart all
players.
This, to bypass all this, right? So it still is the issue of what's going on in the drafting and development world, right? There still is that problem. They've been able to kind of reroute all those concerns and say, look how great this rebuild is, because they had Juan Soto, Max Scherzer, and Trey Turner to deal. But there's no more of that. And they're going to have to find a way.
They're almost set up to do what Rizzo did last time, which is have a great, you know, young core of bats and then spend a poop ton of money on starting pitching because they can't develop it. The problem is they'll still be paying the guys that they paid for last time because they're going to be paying Strasburg forever. And they deferred a ton of money, right? Didn't they defer a ton of money for Scherzer and Strasburg and Corbin? So Corbin, even after it, those contracts are done, they're still paying them.
For a long time. Strasburg, of course, is going to officially retire on Saturday at Nats Park. Corbin has one more season after this year, at least in person. But you're right, they're going to be paying him for a very, very long time. Scherzer as well. So, yeah, it's just a fascinating, fascinating situation going on there. But one more thing I want to get to before we run out of here. You had mentioned, you know, you love this exercise. You are good at this exercise. Teams that are not in the playoffs that you feel like are still lurking that could be playoff teams. I feel like you always have an opinion on this and you always have those numbers to back it up. Whereas I'm just like, I think this team should be better than they are. Who do you got?
Well, mine's super easy. It's super exciting to hear that Jordan Lawler was called up for the Diamondbacks because they have a real obvious need at shortstop. And, you know, just adding a little bit of offensive power to this team, I think could put them over the top. Once you put Lawler in at short, the only place where you're sort of mixing and matching to make it work is at third base with Evan Longoria and Jace Peterson. And now you can throw Geraldo Perdomo in that mix. So you're throwing three interesting guys at it who all have three different strengths. This looks like a legitimate lineup to me. They have a pretty good rotation. They have a bad bullpen, but I think over the course of, 30 days, a bad bullpen. Yeah, we saw the Nationals win it all with a bad bullpen. I feel like there are ways to paper over that or just get lucky in the bullpen that they'll be fine. The of course, the flip side was I was very excited to tell the Diamondbacks that they didn't have to worry about their 40-man roster situation and they could just call up Lawler any moment because they could just cut Nick Ahmed. And I feel bad today. I feel bad today because I saw an interview with Nick Ahmed where he's crying and he's talking about how long he's played with the D-backs and how long he's been there. Mm-hmm. And now, he has 10 minutes to like clean out his locker type situation.
And
I feel so badly about that. And I pair that together with Steven Strasburg, the end of his career and the Mike Soroka stuff. And I just, the sad side of baseball is not something we like to talk about because it makes us sad. It's much more interesting to say the D-backs are going to surge. They have this weekend. They have the Cubs. And if they can sweep the Cubs with their new shortstop, they'll get right back in the mix. I think if they sweep the Cubs, they'll be one game out. So it'll be a real tight finish between them and the Cubs. But the flip side is that when somebody's coming, somebody's going. And so cheers to Nick Ahmed, who built a career on outstanding defense. I bet you he still gets a couple more shots as a utility guy, backup defender. I don't think his story is fully written yet, but I don't think he's a starter anymore in the league. And when you've got a chance to make the postseason, it's slipping between your fingers, and you've got Jordan Lawler, a top prospect ready to go, I think you got to make that move.
Yeah. Pour one out for Nick Ahmed. I agree. So my lurking team, it's kind of tough because there's so many teams in and out of the wild card right now. We mentioned the Marlins earlier, but they're not a lurker because they slid into that final wild card spot. They've won six in a row. They've been a really interesting team to watch. But who
they
I think is going to...
also lost Sandy Alcantara and Jorge Soler. That's a pretty double... That's a double bad situation.
It is. Then they go out and beat the Dodgers. So they're going to have to find a way to... make up that offense. I don't. Yeah, the pitching is a little less concerning because they've been so good historically at being able to pitch. But they did get Jake Berger, Josh Bell. They got adds a little thump to that lineup. I think they're hoping that they can kind of hold serve here for a little bit. But for me, it's the Reds because their schedule down the stretch is just ridiculous. They have 20 remaining games. Only three are against the team with a winning record. As you know, once it comes down, so they are a fringy team, sure.
Oh,
but then you look at their schedule.
Tigers,
They're gonna I think they're gonna sneak in, and a lot of that is because of, you know, they're half game back of the Marlins as we sit here and record this. I mean,
they just had a bad series against the Mariners. I mean, they did win one, but the they won two. That's amazing.
They also won the tiebreaker over Arizona.
I guess that some of those were walk-offs. The 7-6 was a walk-off. That's interesting. I watched snippets of those games and was like, the Mariners are the better team. But the Reds won two out of three, and that's what matters. And I think the best team that they play the rest of the way are the Twins. Everybody else is below 500.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they have such an easy schedule that I think that's going to matter a lot. And like I said, they own tiebreakers matter. Wentz is close. They own the tiebreaker over Arizona. I think with the Marlins, it then becomes an interdivisional record. So I think the Marlins would maybe have the edge there. I'd have to double check it. In a tie-breaking scenario, yeah, they're 18-25 versus the NL Central. The Marlins are 19-21. So that may be decided here in the next couple of weeks if you need the tiebreaker.
Wait,
for those
the Marlins
teams.
Are 19-21 against whom? Against
the NL East.
That's the next tiebreaker is your record against your own division?
Which I think is kind of ridiculous.
That is weird.
Yeah. That's in the Miami tie-breaking scenario.
It's getting a little bit like in the World Cup group play. They're like, you know, how many goals? And then they're like, one of the things is how many yellow cards did you have? There's a tiebreaker in soccer where it's like, if we've gone through everything, if you had fewer yellow cards than the other team, you go through.
Yeah. So we both take NL teams because we think that's probably still, I think, going to be a little more interesting in terms of teams that keep flipping and flopping here for the.
All right. Well, we've got a little bit of an internet issue here to finish off, but we've got to go. Please visit The Athletic. You can find Britt's great reporting on the Nationals. I believe it's $1 a month right now on The Athletic. I've got a mailbag coming up this week. I've got a mailbag coming up this week. And then next week, I think I'm going to do a piece on Corbin Carroll and just how outstanding he is. So you can find us there for $1 a month. And Britt, you have anything to say to sign off? I started the sign off because you were frozen.
We're in disarray without DVR. Thanks everyone for listening to the 3-0 show. It will be Eno and I back with you next week. Stay safe, watch lots of baseball, and have yourself a terrific rest of your week.
Always got the green light here.
Green light 3-0, and she's gone.